Well, after a completely unreasonable amount of time, for only half legitimate reasons, I want to welcome everybody back to Upon This Rock. My name is Max Thomas, and thank you for stopping by. Yeah, what was supposed to be like a 6-month break to have a baby, and I was going to be doing some traveling, turned into a year and a half. So I don't really know what this is. If this is a reboot, a refresh, a redo, a restart, a new season. I'm not 100% sure, but whatever it is, I'm glad you're here. And I want to do a little three-part, I don't want to call it a series, but the next three episodes are going to be kind of grouped together. And I want to do a series of reflections here based on some writing that I've recently done on my Substack. If you didn't know, I have a Substack where I do some writing. I've gotten that back up going now again as well. If you just go to substack.com and search for Upon This Rock, you'll find me there. And I do some regular writing there as well. And I've recently done three pieces there entitled When Memories Change. And I want to kind of springboard off of those into maybe a little bit more of a detailed, free-flowing reflection here on the podcast. So you can go and read those pieces after we finish here, if you'd like. This is reflection has really all started in October when, if you're not aware of what's been going on in the International House of Prayer down in Kansas City, Missouri, and the allegations of clergy abuse and things like that regarding Mike Bickle, their founder. You can go and find that online. And that's not my goal to talk about that here today, except to say that ministry was pretty pivotal in my really kind of early years of faith. And so, I mean, I grew up in the church. I grew up in a ministry family, generations of ministry family. You know, back when I was a kid, we had church every Sunday morning. We first had Sunday school, then we had church every Sunday morning. And for a while there, we were doing two services. Then we had it again Sunday night, then we had it Wednesday night. And then sometimes we'd also have it Friday night or special services. That doesn't count prayer meetings and all that kind of stuff as well. And so I was at the church all the time. But it really wasn't until my senior year of high school into my freshman year of college, which would have been 2005, 2006, that I really began to, I guess, kind of live out my faith. And really quickly in 2006, actually, the International House of Prayer became a really kind of pivotal ministry in my spiritual formation and was a tremendous blessing to me in the call to prayer, fasting, that kind of thing. And in light of the kind of recent allegations about the ministry and founder Mike Bickle, it has gotten me kind of thinking and reflecting on, because if the allegations of clergy abuse and longstanding sexual abuse and prophetic abuse, if you want to call it that, are true, it just sheds a different light on some of the experiences that I've had there, actually in their building or their conferences. I've been to probably 30 or some of their events. I've spoken at their events. I have good friends that have been a part of that ministry, were a part of that ministry, are a part of the ministry. And so it just sheds a little bit of different light if there's this kind of now this dark cloud hanging over it. And so it has gotten me just thinking about kind of my own past, my own story, and what happens when the way that you remember something changes later on in life. What happens when for a long time you believed one thing to be true in a particular moment, and then later on, for whatever reason, you come to rethink that or reevaluate that, and how disconcerting that can be. And it's tied in with, I was catching up on some of the conflict over in Israel and Palestine recently, and I came across this line by a political commentator named Douglas Murray, who himself is a Brit, but apparently has a number of Jewish friends, and he was recounting the story of he was recounting the story of him conversing with one of his Jewish friends, and he has asked his Jewish friend, "What does it like? What is it like to be a Jew in the world?" And his friend said, "To be a Jew means to live with a sense of memory." And that line, "to live with a sense of memory," I think relates in some way to all of us, that we live in light of the memories that we have. But again, what happens when some of those memories change? What happens when some of those memories shift beneath your feet? And a few weeks ago, I was meeting with my spiritual director, and we had just started meeting. This is a new experience. Maybe I'll podcast about that sometime, what it's like. I didn't even really know what a spiritual director was. Our first meeting, he asked me, "So do you know what a spiritual director is?" I said, "No, I know the term." I said, "But I come from the charismatic Pentecostal world. Like, we don't have a spiritual director. It's like not in our vocabulary. We just speak in tongues and prophesy and cast out demons. Like that's our thing." And so we've had a couple of meetings, but this is our first meeting. And he asked me just to recount for him some of the times in my life that I was sure that God had encountered me. It's kind of some of the high moments, essentially, what he was asking for. And 5 years ago, heck, even 3, 4 years ago, and some of them 3, 4 months ago, I would have been able to answer that in certain ways. And in recent months, I would say really some of it in just those last couple of handful of years, and some, like I was saying, in particular when it comes to things related to Kansas City in the last couple of months, some of that has begun to change. And I don't know what to do with certain things anymore. And so what I want to do in these next three episodes, I want to tell three successive stories about God encountering me, three different stories. Each time I would say I was encountered by God. And after that story, I want to offer a brief reflection about that story. And this first one, I want to reflect on what I've been saying. What happens when you actually start to question something that you remember to be true, but you're not sure is true anymore? And so I want to take you back all the way to one of my very first real spiritual encounters. It really may be my first real tangible spiritual encounter that I can remember. Again, I grew up in church, so I have memories before this as it relates to going to church and all that, but as far as a real tangible, what I would call an encounter with God, with the Holy Spirit, this really may be my earliest. I was fourth or fifth grade. I was trying to remember. I think fifth grade. So I'm somewhere in the neighborhood of 9, 10 years old, something like that. We had this evangelist coming through. I'll never forget his name. Steve Hansel was his name. I tried to do a quick Facebook, Google search, and whatever. I couldn't find anything. But Steve, if you're out there, this is for you. He was coming through, and this was a Sunday night meeting. Again, this is when it was regular, normal to have services on Sunday night. And he was speaking at our church, and he was talking about speaking in tongues. He was talking about praying in the spirit. And from, again, I'm going off of my fifth grade memory here. But from what I remember, there was maybe 40, 50, 60 people in the crowd. Steve was at that time, from what I remember, kind of middle-aged, classic Midwestern-looking guy. I don't know if he was a pastor or just an itinerant speaker. I'm pretty sure he was not a missionary. I'm not sure what his exact role was, but he was at our church speaking from the outside, and I don't ever remember him coming back. So I don't know if he had come there before, but anyway, he's preaching about tongues and the gift of speaking in tongues. And again, remember, I come from charismatic world, so this is normal to me. And I surely would have heard about tongues and had experiences of tongues before this. I mean, shoot, in my church growing up, it was completely normal for everybody to pray in tongues. Even we had this one lady who would, in the middle of the service, sometimes in the middle of the sermon, would get up and start praying in tongues, and everybody is dead quiet, and it's just her. I can see it, and I can hear her distinct kind of utterances in my mind still to this day. And she would get up for maybe 30, 45 seconds, and she would say, preach, speak in tongues. And then we would wait, and the whole congregation would sit and wait. And my grandfather, who was the lead pastor at the time, he would then give an interpretation of the tongues. He would prophesy. This was a normal thing in my church growing up. Now, most of us, when we talk about tongues now, it's personal prayer language, it's maybe singing in tongues, or it's the pastor telling everybody maybe to speak in tongues, or it's something done privately. I've yet to ever be to another ch I've never been to another church where someone would actually do the public thing that even I think Paul is actually talking about in his letter to the Corinthians. But that was part of my church experience growing up. Like, we had that growing up. And so I would have been around it a ton, but for whatever reason, that night when this evangelist was coming through, he gave a call at the end of the service to come and receive the baptism of the Holy Spirit and the gift of speaking in tongues. And again, in kind of the theological world I grew up in, that would have been kind of normal theological arithmetic, to put it one way. And I remember standing up, and in the crowd, three people stood up: myself, my younger cousin, who was 3 years younger than I am, so he would have been like seven, and my dad. And so it's three relatives here, and he called us up to the front, and laid hands on us and prayed that we would receive the baptism of the Holy Spirit and the gift of speaking in tongues. And I remember in the auditorium standing on the front steps of the sanctuary. And I remember seemingly kind of nothing happening. And yet, here's this guy, middle-aged, 40 something, same age as my dad at the time, probably, maybe a little bit older, giving us directions to just, open our mouths, begin to speak, and let the Spirit fill it, and He'll take over. Get our brains out of the way. Our brains are going to tell us, our minds are going to tell us that this isn't real. So we need to just open our mouths up and allow ourselves to start speaking. And it'll sound like gibberish, but just keep going because it's the Lord filling it. And so that's what I did. I followed those directions. And again, this was normal. I've done this, I will sadly admit. And maybe I'll touch on that here at the end. And then I remember lying on my face on the steps, so I'm laying over three, four, five steps, and continuing. And I remember my hand being kind of like tucked into my elbow, and I'm kind of like looking around, but making sure that like nobody can see me. I'm kind of just, peeking underneath my elbow, looking behind me. What's going on? What am I supposed to be doing? Is my dad still next to me? What is he doing? Because I don't want to be the first one to get up. This is supposed to be a moment, and I'm by faith. I'm listening to instructions, and something seems to be happening. I'm praying. I'm on the ground. But yet at the same time, I have this memory. I'm pretty aware, like I'm trying to figure out what am I supposed to do next. And so I'm looking around, what are the two people next to me doing? Because I don't want to be the first one up. I don't want to be unspiritual. I don't want to end this thing before I'm supposed to. And eventually I end up getting up and going back to my seat. And I remember walking back down the center aisle. And this was, I'm the grandson of the founder of the church, of the lead pastor of the church. And it's my cousin and my dad, so it's kind of this family thing. I'm a young kid. And so you can imagine, and in charismatic Pentecostal world, the receiving the gift of tongues and the quote unquote baptism of the Holy Spirit, that's kind of like the pinnacle moment. That's you're in after you get that. That's like you get saved and then you get baptized in the Holy Spirit. Like those are the two great moments in your spiritual life. We don't really, we didn't talk about communion much. We didn't talk about baptism much as kind of pivotal moments, kind of keystone moments in our spiritual life. It was salvation and baptism of the Holy Spirit, it's specifically with the gift of speaking in tongues. And that was it. We went home and I was filled with the Holy Spirit and spoke in tongues. And that was settled in my mind. And in the years that followed, I just continued to do it. Those same babbling utterances. And pretty soon, even really before I was really walking with the Lord much, I was leading prayer meetings in the youth group, junior high and in the youth group, speaking in tongues in the microphone. In fact, our prayer meetings were so lively. I don't want to say good, but they were so lively that we would have adults. We'd have a prayer meeting Wednesday night before our normal youth service, and I would lead it from the microphone, and we would have adults who would come early, come into our prayer meeting with a bunch of teenagers, 14, 15, 16-year-olds, and then go into the adult Bible study. And for a while there, I remember other youth groups and other youth pastors would come to our youth group prayer meeting for 25 minutes. And then leave and go to their youth group at a different church. But they had heard that that amazing things were happening in our prayer meeting. And many times our prayer meeting would just flow right into the actual service. And a lot of that was me on a microphone leading a bunch of teenagers praying in tongues, these same tongues. And the number of tremendous experiences that I had in those formative years of me and my friends. And then I think about when I really did get kind of saved and start to follow the Lord, and in late high school and then into college. And by the time I was 19, 20, now I was leading prayer meetings for the whole church. The prayer meetings were led mainly by our associate pastor at the time, our youth pastor at the time, and then myself as like this 19-year-old kid. And I would be given the microphone and lead the whole congregation in prayer meetings, and we would have these late night prayer meetings on Friday nights and in the weekends, and I would be leading them and praying in tongues the whole time. And again, the profound encounters, senses of calling, the Spirit coming alive in me in those moments, are numerous. But what I don't know what to do with now is I don't know what to do with that very first night, that Sunday night when I was in fifth grade, being coached to speak in tongues, to not question it, to get my brain out of the way, on the ground, because again, that's what you're supposed to do. And this is all really clear in my brain, so I don't feel like I've thought a lot about this over the last this particular story, actually in the last couple of years. It's pretty clear in my brain. I don't feel like I'm rewriting my own history here. I have pretty clear memory of it being kind of coached, and again, that was normal to me. So for the longest time, there was no reason for me to question that. And me looking around, what am I supposed to do? Am I done yet? Do I, what's the appropriate thing to do? Should I get up? Do I keep going? Do I lay here? What do I do? And what I don't know what to do with that first night is, if that first night is not what I thought that it was for all these years, then what do I do with all of the subsequent nights, all of the subsequent services in which I was, quote unquote, speaking in tongues? If that first night was not true, what do I do with all those other ones? And my card's fully on the table here. This has been a hard thing for me to grapple with, and really still is. This is, I say in the piece on my Substack, I literally say writing that sentence about not knowing what to do was hard. Because what does that mean for me? What does that mean for all of those moments? If that first night was contrived, and I simply convinced myself at an early age that this was real, and then I just didn't ever question it for 20 years. What does that mean? How do I come to terms with that? How does that color the rest of those experiences? When I, quote unquote, spoke in tongues after that, privately or publicly, was I just walking in some form of self-deception, of psychosis, of I convinced myself of something to be true, even though it was not true? And I've had other encounters with God, like I said, many of them where I've felt overwhelmed by his goodness, his love, his power. And so many of those are tied to me speaking in tongues. I don't know what to do with all that. And the purpose of this podcast here is I don't have an answer to that yet. But I can hear the voice of my bishop, Chris Green. And he has this saying that he says that we serve the living God. And that means that he's always present and always creatively working. He's working when we don't realize it. He's working in ways that we don't perceive it, even in the moments that we don't recognize his work at all. And he's always doing, as Paul says, more than we can ask or imagine. And that is what I'm clinging to right now. I don't know what is real and what was not real. I don't know what was contrived and what was not. I don't know if that first night was true or if it was just me buying into some spiritual game. Game's not the right word. Into some spiritual practice, but that was given to me, not actually. I see, I'm even struggling. I'm not even going to edit this out. I'm struggling for words. It was given to me by men, not by God. I'm not sure. But what I am sure about, what I am wholly confident of, is that even if the worst is true, and that is all of that was built on a faulty foundation of that first spiritual encounter that I had. The first spiritual encounter I had was actually not a spiritual encounter at all. That does not mean that God is not working. That does not mean that God was not there. That does not mean that God was not present actively. It may mean that he is present and was working in ways that I did not perceive at the time and in ways that were different than what I thought he was doing at the time. Again, another Chris Greenism here. That at any given moment, there is what we experience and there is what God is doing. And those oftentimes are two different things. And so I may have experienced one thing in fifth grade, but that may not have been what God was actually doing. And it may have taken me 25 years to actually catch up with that reality. And above everything else, as I'm trying to sort through all of this, and we'll end here and land the plane here. Above everything else, this is the thing that rings most true to me, is that God is always present and always at work, even in ways, and usually in ways that I don't understand and I don't fully realize. I mean, Christ is alive, and therefore, like he told Mary after he rose from the dead, we cannot cling to our old thoughts about him. He's making all things new. Even those moments in our past when we thought that we most sensed him. I think in some ways this is what it means that Christ is yesterday, today, and forever. That he is present to us in every moment of our lives, even those that are past to us and yet future to us, Christ is present to them. And the God who is yesterday, today, and forever, some of what that means is that he is able to transfigure yesterday, today, and forever. And I think this is what I'm experiencing right now, is some of what will happen in the end. Whatever Christ's second coming is, I think what I'm experiencing now with my memories changing and being transfigured into something else, that is something akin to what will happen on that day. That on that day when Christ comes again and makes all things new, that all things includes our past and our history, that we will look back on our history and we will remember it, not differently as in he made it something that it was not, but we will remember it truly for what it actually was. History and God will catch up to each other in our lives, so that what we remember in our own history is both simultaneously what we actually went through and what God was actually doing. That those two things will be one and the same for every moment of our lives that we remember. And that will be the first time that that is true, because right now, there is what God is doing, and there is what God has done, and there is what we remember. And sometimes those two things are not the same thing. And so I, you know, full confession here, I don't speak in tongues much anymore. I actually haven't really for a few years. You know, every once in a while, when I'm in a prayer, or maybe in a song, those utterances will bubble up, and it doesn't last long, usually only a few syllables, and then it kind of shuts off. And some of that, again, is I just don't know what to do with it. And some of it I can tell is kind of just still innate, because I'd done it for so long that way. And so but I don't do it much anymore. And maybe one day God will give me that gift, or give it again, or however that would work. And as my memories are changing, and maybe as yours do too, my encouragement for this reflection, for this episode, would be this, is that as our memories change, God remains the same. That as our memories change, God remains the same. That he is true and he is faithful. And that what he was doing in every given moment and what we remember about that moment are maybe not the same thing. But the good news of the gospel is that whatever God was doing in that moment is better than what you remember, even if it is different. And that disconcerting feeling, we need to lean into the goodness of God and remember that he is good, and therefore what he was doing is better than what we remember. So stay tuned for part two. I appreciate you guys coming back. Make sure you check out the Substack. You can read the whole series there as well. I appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.